from the great halls of their house, there are assembled three who hope to one day be the world's greatest driving heroes. Created from the cosmic legends of the universe comes our team captain, the Vision, Bill Fisher, and their soon-to-be Wonder Woman, Vicky Fisher, and our Captain Marvel and head flight trainee, Jennifer Scripchunk. Their mission, to fight injustice, share what is right and wrong, to get you out of your house and come out racing with them and serve all mankind. They are the Garage Heroes in Training Team.
Welcome to the Garage Heroes in Training Podcast. I'm going to be one of the hosts for this episode. My name is Bill. Who else is hosting?
I'm Vicky.
Nobody else came and showed up. Wait, maybe somebody did. We have returning guests. Ridlife GLTC / Sunday Cup competitor, co-host of Track Walking Podcast. He sometimes drives a Mazda 2 called Mooncake. He drives a far from stock Miata. Purveyor of Robertson Racing / Team Becky is awesome. Our Norm Abrams of Racing, Scott Robertson. Welcome back, sir.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
If we don't do a long intro, they're just terrible.
Yeah, I don't often get intros done for me. I'm usually the one doing the introing of other people. So that's nice. That's good.
The first line of our doc is always Bill wings an intro. So
I usually try to do the world's worst intros for people. Like just really stereotyping everything that I've done in life. So
yeah. You must have greater aspirations because we have taken the title as worst intros. So in case people have not been here before, and why would they not have been here before? Because your episodes are some of our best. Could you do a brief intro that's not quite as much fun as my Norm Abrams of racing?
My name is Scott Robertson. I am a driver coach, setup specialist, vehicle setup specialist. I race a K-swapped Miata in the Gridlife Touring Cup. I occasionally get to drive Becky's Time Attack car called Mooncake. I drive the world's coolest aero van.
Yes, you do.
We do the One Lap of America. We have a website, robertson-racing.com, where we have all of our services and products that we use and recommend. And I am the co-host of Track Walking Podcast with my dear friend Seth Lemke. And yeah, that's who I am in the racing world.
Is that the Seth Lemke, the mini bike superstar, international renowned?
Yeah, that's him. Uh-huh. He's going to he's really excited about the racing season for himself this year.
Yeah, he should be. He seems to have fun on those. Will he be partaking in one lap this year, or is he going to be?
He is done for the foreseeable future with one lap as well as competitive car things.
Really?
Yep.
So. Yeah, we heard that, but we were hoping that, you know, sometimes as things get closer, things change.
Well, is he just retiring and walking off into the sunset? And
some would say track walking off into the sunset.
Track walking off into the sunset. Oh, that's a good one.
That was yeah, it was just time. The reasons why he was kind of staying in the space was to hang out and be with buddies and kind of do that thing. But
it's where his people are.
Yeah, but anymore, you know, his people are motorcycle racing, podcast, and he has interactions in other places. And it's just not, you know, it's definitely been a bit of a shift, but a good one. He's not terribly sad about it because he knows what he's going to do with this time otherwise.
It's never an issue coming up with what to do with your time. It's a matter of coming up with the time to do what you want, especially if you're involved in racing, and he still is.
It's true. It's true.
The little baby bikes take just as much time.
They do. Yeah, he told me that he's got his race motor in his bike. and he's done all the testing and kind of ready to go. He and his daughter are going to be teaming up for the endurance race season this year. Mm-hmm. And yeah, some of them she's going to do by herself, probably be a couple that he does by himself, and then hopefully at least half of them or something, they're able to meet up and team up.
So if the wish list for the largest spatula to scoop him off the track is available, where should they be sending the spatula to?
I don't know how they do it.
I don't either.
Stonia, I mean, she's this tiny little young woman and riding this bike for 4 hours.
Oh.
At race pace is, I mean, granted it's endurance race pace, but still like it's, you're not sitting in a seat strapped in. You are have to be moving around constantly. And it's not like it's Road America where you've got long straights. This is a go-kart track. It turns all the time.
So my standard answer with people asking, why don't you race motorcycles, is because I would like them.
But no, you would not. No, yes, I've seen your body.
Well, you're assuming I've already fallen. I'm just saying, you know, yes. I would really
I know
like
how
it.
Your body is.
And then I would fall.
And you break lots of things.
That's right. And gravity is apparently highly localized in my presence. It's much bigger than it was when I was in high school. I have no idea why it doubled. But I always think that the mini bikes that he does are probably as taxing, perhaps more taxing than like an endurance go-kart. And an endurance go-kart, for people who have not done more than like go-kart rentals for 10 or 15 minute sessions, that will kill you. So is it kind of similar?
I've done go-karts, not even like leader go-karts, anything like that. Mm-hmm. Like quick indoor electric go-karts,
yeah,
and gas go-karts, but that's about it. And I know what that does to my upper body.
Exactly.
But in terms of like tiny bikes, I can easily picture that being more difficult.
Yeah.
Because of the way that you are having to reposition your body,
mm-hmm,
bike constantly. Yeah. So I guess I'm going to claim that what I haven't done is harder than what I have done.
All right. Well, I kind of lean towards what your logic is there, but man, that's 4 hours. Wow.
Yeah, falling off of a bike, like, I don't care how close they are to the ground. Like, people still break bone, get sent to hospital, so.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of my specialty growing up, so I'm going to stay off the bikes. So, sir, you are an excellent driver. You just swim in the deepest of deep pools and get measured against some of the rougher crowds that you could be.
It's rough out there, man.
It is.
We have some incredibly talented drivers and very well prepped cars.
Mm-hmm.
It is intimidating at
times. It is. You know, you're going to measure on the very severe scale of the bar with what you've chosen to do. And one of my friends, who's a good racer as well, I told him what you guys were doing routinely at Lime Rock with the horsepower and weight that you guys are doing, and he's like, that's just not possible. And I'm like, well, they're on TV right now. You can watch them do it. So
we get that at every single track we go to when we first go there, is everyone's looking at ST5, ST4 times,
mm-hmm,
you know, TT4 times, stuff like that, and trying to figure out like, well, where are the front runners in GLTC going to be? And it's oftentimes quicker than you would think.
Mm-hmm. It is. And then it's also shown by some of the people who come in, just, you know, maybe they're just trying it out or just starting, or maybe they just got a race or two in them, and you know that they're very good from something else that they do, and they come in and they're sometimes at best mid-pack, sometimes not.
Yeah, we've had several drivers come in and be towards the top. Maybe podium. Certainly top 10 and things like that. And we've had people come in similarly who think that they're going to be podium, top 10, and, you know, end up being mid-pack.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you don't know until you know, I guess. So F around and find out.
It is a tough, tough pond that you swim in. So one of the things that you've been doing, because we were talking before the podcast started recording, you have similar plus or minus the same experience in terms of seasons that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Only you are either A, better at this, B, just did it better than we do, or C, all of the above, which is why you are being interviewed on the podcast and we are asking the questions, representing the people who don't know anything. And we're not talking about our listeners all the time. We're usually talking about us, and you know, we just hope somebody else doesn't know what we're talking about. One of the things that we did, and I'm sure Miss Vicky will agree with me, which is going to cause pain in her body, but she'll try. We approached it from working on the driver and getting to be better as drivers and racers. And we more or less treated the car as a black box. And we really don't focus on the car itself to the point that, you know, sometimes if we don't get to the GoPro and turn that on, oh, well, that didn't stop us from racing. Or sometimes if we don't get to test the
people out on test day.
Yeah. You know, sometimes the weekend gets away from you. But one of the things that you've been doing and doing well and learned to the point where you're, you know, somebody that we are definitely going to be working with in the future is taking care of the setup and even taking care of the data and not only what to do, how to do it, but how to use it. Because, you know, a book of all the data that you need is useless if you don't know how to use it. But before we get into that, I was hoping maybe, is there a way to do a qualitative or even better, a quantitative kind of measure of the potential if you're kind of just drive the car you got because you got what you got and you're just going to do it? Are we talking tenths? Are we talking seconds? Are we talking, you know, with our times, minutes?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, you flatter me. Thank you.
It's my job. I'm the host.
Second of all, I even think in the best of drivers, there's always more than a tenth of a second on the table.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
1 second, especially at a track they're familiar with, probably not.
For the pointy end, yeah, I would agree.
So, you know, without really knowing a baseline, like kind of seeing some videos, seeing some data, something like that, it's kind of hard to put a particular lap time number on it in terms of what kind of improvement. I know an easy way to get a judgment of a car is to put somebody who's known for being quick and being able to learn cars quickly into mm-hmm. your car for a session. Can be a good way of your car's potential and get some feedback on your car, things like that. But even with that, it needs to be taken with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. It can be great to kind of compare their data with your data, but kind of at the end, like, you still need to learn your car and you still need to know what the adjustments can do. And just because they drove it to this doesn't mean that you can't improve on the car, and you could be every bit as quick as this driver that you consider faster than you.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you become more comfortable in the car and the car becomes more capable. Does that make sense?
It does.
I think the other thing too with us is that maybe we don't know what a properly set up car feels like. So to drive something that is set and then turn around and say, "Ooh, we need to do that to our car." We don't have a sensation for it yet. We are working on our own cars, and we are in a point when our skills are now leveling off to a point where we can now get to tweaking our cars. It took us a while to get there, to learn about engines and cars and stuff. Now we're at the point of setting them.
Sure. Yeah, I wouldn't say that you necessarily need to experience a well set up car to know what it feels like, because I think, especially as you're kind of describing your experience level, and I think also probably comfort level in the car.
I think what has happened, we've already outgrown one vehicle and we've sold that vehicle.
Which one?
We used to have a race truck.
I like that truck. Yeah,
the truck was
still in the it's still in the family. Don't worry.
Yeah, it is still in the family. It's just owned by second team.
In GLTC, we have an S10.
Mm-hmm.
They're fun to drive. They really are.
It's K-swapped. It is quick in a straight line. It's got some work to be done on setup itself, but yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, so we felt that as a team, we had outgrown that particular one, so we moved into several other different types of cars that we're in right now. But our skill set is getting much better to where now we're like teenagers testing the limits, if that makes sense. And we're probably a little sloppy about it, and we're probably going to get ourselves in trouble. But it's like, I think this year is where we want to, let's, you know, we've done all this training. We've been training for a couple of years now. Let's see what we can, let's quit like messing around. See what we can actually do at a track and be serious about it. We've always ambassadored people on our teams. So we just need to sit down and go, okay, as a team, let's just see what we can do for one race, at least start there.
Yeah, for sure. I think one interesting bit to consider that I think a lot of people don't or maybe can't, because not all of us can sell the car that we've gotten all this sunken money into and go start a whole new platform. So oftentimes we're more, for better or worse, we're stuck with what we've got, sort of thing. But it's worth to take a look at what we do have and the accessibility of parts, the depth and breadth of knowledge for that particular chassis. That's a huge reason why I went with the Miata, is because parts are super readily available. They're fairly cheap, and these cars have been raced for 35 years.
What year is your Miata again?
It's a 2001. So okay. It's an NB2.
Okay. All right.
She has an NB1.
Yep. So mine's better.
Yeah. It's far from stock, too. Yeah.
But I chose that particular platform over an NA for very specific reasons. Because they've been out, because they've been improving it. It's basically the same chassis, but it's the slightly stronger, more rigid chassis with the larger aftermarket support and proper headlights. No offense, I love the blinky blinks.
But I know. You like the winkies.
So that's a lot of the reason why I chose this car. And there are always niche cars that I love seeing at the track. But just knowing...
I know one. Turbo PT Cruiser, perhaps?
Maybe. Oh. Yeah, that's a discussion.
Yeah.
But like, I know those enough to show up have to do twice the amount of work that most others do just to be there. There's a guy in Gridlife in Time Attack who's time attacking a Oldsmobile Cutlass. And the amount of work that he's doing on that, it is amazing to watch. And I'm a huge cheerleader of his, but just the amount of work he has to do to get there, let alone to perform against and be compared to other people, is huge. So I think analyzing and taking an honest look at the car you're driving, kind of what is the ceiling of this particular chassis, is going to be important for whatever rule set, whatever series you're kind of looking at.
Affordability on parts too.
Huge. It's huge. I mean, I just got
ease to work on.
Yeah.
That's like the right now we have the Miata, and I've worked on a Miata for a while. And we have the Honda Civic, which is a 1993, and it's a D-series, a D-series engine. And both of them, the same. Literally, they're like Legos.
Yes.
They're like Legos. They're just uncomplicated.
Yes. So I think I would start there. Mm-hmm. And then after that, and just like, we don't have it all figured out over here. Like, I just came up with the idea to keep all of our setup notes, track maps, and learnings folder and stuff. I now have a folder system that I'm going to be carrying in the trailer with us. Mm-hmm. So that whenever we go to a track, we just pull the specific folder rather than like thumbing through the gear and the track and all that stuff just to find it. It's just going to speed us it up that little bit more. And if we need to refer to another track while we're at another one, we can, but we don't have to do kind of all that weird first work.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it all kind of comes back to records, notes, scribbles, kind of whatever it is. But records are, for us, vitally important. And we've been doing that for really since the beginning. As soon as I conned Becky into coming along with me on a very, very wet Mid-Ohio weekend.
It's always wet at Mid-Ohio.
It is. And I'm probably one of the only sad people that they paved it.
we've had a few people who've mentioned they're sad, so don't worry.
It was hard fought knowledge to find my way around that place in the wet. So I really would start there. Is we actually have a template that I can share with you guys for tire temperatures, setup, weather conditions, notes, and that's per session. So you can do a front or back page, but every face of a page has two sessions worth of notes that you can put into it. And you put the track, you put the dates, you put the conditions. Are you testing? Are you qualifying? Are you racing? And then what are your starting pressures? What are your finishing temperatures? What are the splits in between them? Any setup changes that you did underneath? Stuff like that. So that's largely where we kind of live in terms of car setup for our cars and the cars that we support and partner with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the underlying points that I know we agree with, and I'm 99% sure you'll agree with, is don't just go to the track and just drive. Don't like try. It's expensive in time, money, consumables, every single way. It's expensive. And if you got to stay somewhere, whatever. But, you know, I try and minimize the amount of let's just get some laps in and, you know, shake off the rust and everything. You know, there's a point for that. But I always think you should have at least one thing you're working on and don't just go because it's fun.
I largely agree. I do, you know, this is an expensive hobby. It does take an enormous amount of time, resources, financial stress, the colored hairs still left on heads, things like that. At the same time, like at the end of the day, if you're not having fun, it's probably not going to be worth it. It's probably not going to be sustainable.
True. I'm not saying don't have fun. I'm just saying don't just. Right. You know, you see some people that they're like, well, how can I get better? I'm stuck in a plateau. I'm like, well, what are you doing? And they're like, well, I go, I'm here every month and I do my laps. And I'm like, well, what are you changing? And they're like, nothing. I'm like, well, you can't get better if you don't change something. So.
Or also if you don't know what you're doing. True. And I don't mean that in that there are drivers out there who have no idea like how to drive. That's not what I'm saying. What I find is oftentimes, particularly with novice, intermediate, maybe some lower advanced drivers, is when I try to tease out of them what they are doing right now, rather than, you know, they always want to know what's next. But when I try to tease out of them, what are you doing? How are you manipulating the pedals and the steering wheel? You know, what are you looking at here and there? Oftentimes, many people have a hard time explaining that. They don't really know where they're braking and where they're turning and kind of what their references are. And references are anything that can be sensed, can be seen, felt, or heard. Tasting doesn't really come into the track unless there's a big patch of pollen just happened to be in the exact same spot every lap or something. I don't know.
You need to come to Lemons. We get to taste some cars.
Yeah, nice. But yeah, I think you to know what you are doing is vitally important to then learn what to play with. Because if you're just playing around, you're not really sure what you're changing. But even if you come out of a corner, you're like, wow, that felt great. I don't know what I did differently. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to do a lot more experimenting to be able to get back to that. Mm-hmm. Know, what did I do? Did I, instead of braking later, did I brake earlier, just a little bit lighter? Did I turn in a little bit early and get back to throttle a little bit later? Like, what was it that I did differently? So along with kind of the records and the note keeping for car setup in terms of driving, knowing what you are doing currently is important. And some people, that's a track map. I'm a huge fan of writing things down, like physically with a pencil, pen, marker, whatever you've got. I really want a dry erase board in the trailer. That's how my brain works.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, maybe I'll do that.
We have a dry erase track map that's the size of a board in our trailer.
There you go. I want that. I'm going to steal it.
I can tell you where to get them cheap.
But yeah, just doing that, like having a starting place, is important to kind of figure out what's next.
So I think in summary of that, would you say intentionality is kind of underlying fundamental of that? Because, you know, you don't know what you're changing if you don't know what you're aiming for, and you don't know what you're aiming for if you don't have something to aim at.
Sure. I think so. I also want to be clear that not everybody is out track driving to compete. They're not out there to necessarily be the best. They're out there for an experience. They're out there explicitly to have fun. I'm having this experience with my mom, who just started to drive last year. And she's not a young woman herself, but I think it's amazing that she and I, in January 2023, flew out to Maryland to pick up her ND2 and drive it back on summer tires, of course. Waze also tried to take us through Canada, which didn't work out very well, but that's another issue.
It was shorter.
She got that car specifically to be able to put the top down in the summer, but also to take on track occasionally. And you know, she does about 2 to 3 track weekends a year. And that's her car. She, you know, she wants to get more comfortable with it, but she's not out there to light anyone's world up on track.
Mm-hmm. Well, to shamelessly pimp someone else's podcast, for the lizard brain competitive racers out there, this is the must get better, must die trying to get better that we're kind of talking about in most of this.
Yes. And they are, DJ specifically, are big proponents in using competition as a live metric for your own performance and how to get better. And I definitely see the benefit of that for myself and for many others that I know. Competition is not a place to necessarily work on things.
No.
Maybe when you're just trying to find the last few percent, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the practice is vitally important. And I've been only doing race weekends for the last 2.5 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you my driving has really plateaued.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of exciting to say, because like I'm not doing poorly results wise in GLTC, but I know behind the wheel I'm not getting better. Part of it's, you know, the amount of work I do outside of driving on any given weekend. I, you you know, time is very valuable. But so this year, you know, I'm formatting my season differently to do fewer race weekends, like to race fewer race weekends and to do more testing, more driving, more working on stuff, which I think is going to be important, especially when, like, we started out the podcast saying, you know, the Touring Cup are, Adam likes to say, a bunch of assassins. Huh. When you are constantly comparing yourself to some of the best in the country and you're not making improvements, that can really beat you down after a while. So to step out of that environment into something else can kind of remind you that that's maybe I'm not absolutely terrible at this after all.
Yeah.
Can be a bit of a mood booster for sure.
Mm-hmm. So I guess in, you know, engineering background, guilty.
We've got a few of those on our team. It's
couple,
okay.
Couple. Mm-hmm. So to me, the racing was always the output variable. And I always wanted to work on my input variables, which was where, you know, you and I had the discussion a couple times last year where we were talking about better driver versus faster driver. And we were always trying to be better drivers, but we never cared, concerned, worried about faster driver. And then we started making that transition last year. And I think if you can control or improve the inputs, and that could be physical inputs or the inputs in terms of your practice, including what we're going to talk about eventually when we actually get there, but you can see the effect of that in your outputs, but you got to be careful when you're using racing as your output and that your competitors are also improving. So, you know, as F1 showed us last year, you know, Mercedes may be better, Ferrari may be better, but Red Bull got better too, guys. So.
And that's the thing. If you know, to talk about F1 for a hot moment, is everyone improved over last year.
Except even Alpine.
But believe it or not, even Alpine.
Didn't look like it.
But everybody got better. And so I'm kind of dumbfounded when people come to a grid life weekend and say, I really want to get a top 10, or I really want to get a top 5, or I really want to be in this part of the field. Okay, like, I'm one of two people to win all four races in a GLTC weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because all of a sudden I became Kimi Raikkonen or like some amazing driver. It's because I love every one of them. Believe me, I'm not talking shit. But the fat, really fast guys and women didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a small field. And I had the best of what we had that weekend. And so when you come to a race weekend saying, I'm going to do this placing wise, I'm going to finish here. Mm-hmm. If you're going for wins, like, go for it. You know, I don't think that can hurt, but like to say top tens and stuff like that feels very arbitrary and outside of your control as a driver and car preparer.
Yep.
And in life and in car things, I really only have time and energy for the things I can control.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you can do really well and end up making yourself very unhappy if you do that type of measurement, potentially.
Yeah, and I can tell you some of my best races didn't have terribly good results. You know, in seasons gone by, I've had some what felt like very good drives. Just the results didn't really show it, or like I started from the back or something. One of my favorite memories was from 2 or 3 Midwest festivals ago. My exhaust separated and melted my passenger side motor mount.
Ooh.
Which was not the first time, but we didn't have much time before the next race. So I recruited 2 friends and we kind of got to work to replace this motor mount, which means taking off the exhaust. It's nothing's easily accessible, but we were able to start to get it wrapped up and we're getting close to time that I said, all right, you guys are going to have to finish this. I have to get my stuff on. Car's still up in the air. Becky's putting on wheels. These guys are still turning wrenches. I'm getting in the car, strapping in. And then they're about to lower the car. They're looking around and I'm like, take one more look, be sure, and then we'll go. Because I don't want to say, like, you know, everyone's just hands off and then like I'm driving onto track with something dragging behind me or something. So they take a look. Becky does a quick safety check and I go down through paddock at a reasonable pace because it's Midwest Festival and everyone's dogs and kids are running around. But as soon as I turn, do my 180 to come up to grid, the grid workers are like doing the windmill, like pulling me up, and the guy at the top of grid is just like waving as fast as they can because the entire grid is already on track out to turn 5 and 6. And so I'm coming up grid at pace, slow down enough to, you know, do the helmet strap and harness check. And then I'm going. And for the first 3/4 of a lap, I don't catch up with them until turn 8 and 9. Like I'm at full pace catching up to them. And at the very back, and so green flag finally drops. You know, my heart rate drops enough. And the first 3 laps, I am focused on what's coming next. I'm being decisive. Like, it was some of the best flow in the car I've had and some of my best decision-making I've had in a race. And sure enough, coming out of turn 2, like lap 4, the car sputters. And I'm like, is this ignition? Is this throttle? We were having throttle issues at the time. I'm looking, I was like, it's just, and then finally it'd pick back up and go. And so, and sure enough, I look at the fuel gauge and we hadn't filled up with fuel in all the haste of everything. So I have to come in early after this heroic effort by Becky and our friends to get the car on track. And I come in and we are just, like, Becky and I hug and just cry because it's like we worked so hard and like the race was going well, like, again, in terms of my outputs, what I'm able to do. And just like, you know, there it was. But
yeah,
it's a good memory now
for sure. Mm-hmm. Indeed. So Scott, I guess part of what you do is related to controlling the inputs of the car itself as a tool. So is there kind of a mental prioritization that you would promote that would be things that people should look at in almost a hierarchy?
There are for us, but what we have done and what I always encourage people to do is know what you're willing to change at the track, mm-hmm. and what you're not willing to touch. And what you're willing to do at home in between events and what you're not.
Right.
Because if you're at a track, are you willing to change your alignment at the track? Most people, no. Mm-mm. Some people, yeah. But that's a very important line to cross, because if you're not going to touch it, if you're not willing to touch it, then that is a set thing that you can just push aside and say, all right, we have a slightly smaller box we can work with, but we can put more of our energy into this box. So that's going to be more, are you willing to adjust ride heights,
mm-hmm.
at the track?
Change your ratio in the diff? Probably right. Not.
Exactly. Are you willing to do tire pressures? Most people willing to do tire pressures. Ride height is kind of that next level. You still have to get under the car, turn some wrenches, but it's certainly not taking measurements and readings and stuff like that for an alignment. Are you willing to adjust sway bars? Are your sway bars even adjustable?
Mm-hmm.
Again, knowing kind of what things, and write them down. Knowing what things you are willing to work with. Do you have adjustable shocks? And are you willing to adjust those? those are all things that can be done. And I think once you mark those down and also kind of have a separate, all right, we're not willing to do an alignment at the track, totally doable in between events.
Mm-hmm.
That much, we can work with that, because then we know what we need to adjust and what we can control while we're at the track. But then we're also learning enough to know that once you go come back here, or maybe for the next weekend, here are the things we would like to try next
mm-hmm.
that we can't do right now. Is that, you guys follow?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's going to differ depending on whether it's a test day or a HPD day or a race day.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, throwing a 10 changes at something from race one to race two, you can, as long as you know what those are going to do mm-hmm. and you've tried things and you kind of know you have an expected result when you change all these things. I don't think anyone's making 10 changes, but
you know,
unless it's like going from dry to raining, then we will make all the changes, but we kind of know what we're doing at that point.
Yeah. So let's do a quick case study, I guess. So Miss Vicky,
yes.
has a new to her 1999 Spec Miata prepped mm-hmm. and ready. And I'm not trying to insult her in any way. If you were to make a change or ask her what the change of a sway bar would be, or what the change of a ride height would be, or what the rake would be and how it would affect the handling of the car, I don't think she's quite there yet. So she wouldn't know whether that's going to make it tighter, looser, or anything. So let's pretend that we have that as our car, and we're going to do a test day. And all we want to do, in my mind, and I may be wrong, have her sit in the car and have two or three or four of us running around like little monkeys making the changes. I think you want to make big swings, and then having her feel that difference and just lap after lap after lap. Is that kind of how it should go, or is there a better way for us to do that?
Would you like to hear my list of questions?
I have no doubt. That's why I tried to get to your list. I figured if I talked long enough, you could find it.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
So, Bill, guess what?
What?
We did the Sentinel. We did the Sentinel.
We did.
How did you like it? You know what? We were talking about the Sentinel.
We have.
It was great. We understood watching how the Sentinel works. Mm-hmm. But we finally got it into our car. And I got to tell you, that was really awesome. I was able to see every one of my mistakes.
We have hours of them.
We have hours of my mistakes. But we have hours of good stuff, too, which is awesome. It actually showed us the speed that shows where we were on track.
We were streaming it.
We were streaming it live.
Boring billions of people across the world.
But it was pretty incredible. Plus, on it, you're able to put your insignia, your logos on your app also. And the clarity was amazing. It was really easy to put in. Easier than I thought it was.
I know. You kept making a big deal out of it. I'm like, it's really not that hard.
Until
we focused on it. It wasn't too bad. And then we got some help. No. It was pretty easy.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty good.
You know what? I like the stream, because some of the tracks we go to don't have great cell phone coverage, but it's got a USB stick backup. So mm-hmm. I just uploaded the high quality video without the cellular interruption. So if you watched us earlier and said, wow, they got from there to there really quickly, you can watch the real video and see that. No, we didn't. It's just a cell phone went out.
mm-hmm. But yeah. So the learning curve for me, obviously, I'm slightly techno-Amish.
Slightly.
When it comes to the wiring and stuff like that. But we get it in, and I love it. We were able to sit there right at the track and watch what we were doing in the car. And that was amazing.
Which was good, because if you have a problem with your radio, you can tell, you know, if something is going on that you need to know about. Like mm-hmm. a couple times we've had cars come in and we didn't know they were broken. I know it's hard to imagine one of our cars being broken, but you know, whatever. But you can watch the video, and even with the cell phone coverage we had at that particular event, it was like a 30-second delay. So it wasn't mm-hmm. bad. Mm-hmm. And you can compare multiple drivers, because you have each of the stints are broken up. So we got to work on not only our driving, but if we wanted to, we could work on our pit stops and see exactly what we do. And there's some things that we need to talk about as a team. And it was pretty good. You know, like I said, it takes me, once we got the wiring hooked up for the power, it's, I probably could go from an empty shell to a full up setup running Sentinel. I could probably do that in like 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you could literally install it in a car before a race. It's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we got to see the driver and the front windshield. And if we want to, we can have three. We can see backwards, or one of the guys we were going to work with at the upcoming event, he said, could you put a camera on the driver's eyes so we could see what they're looking at? I said, why, yes, I can. I haven't done it yet, but I'll figure it out. We've got time.
Well, I love it.
All right, very well. That sounds like I can buy another one then. Woo!
Before, when somebody wants our help in terms of car setup, I have a list of questions that I have before we get to the track, just to familiarize myself with what they're, where they're at and what kind of a box we have for working in. Mm-hmm. So the first is just basic year, make, model of the vehicle. What are we working with? What is it? New, old? And then that kind of gives me an idea of like power, weight, electronics, kind of all that stuff. Mm-hmm. What run group? Why are we there? Are we there to compete? Are we there to race? Are we doing time attack? Are we just doing HPDE? Or are we doing endurance? There's all sorts of stuff. Approximate power. And this is important for a few reasons, but also just like, is this stock power? Has this been modified at all? Because that, you know, the amount of power does affect springs, it affects mm-hmm. shocks, ride heights, aero load, kind of all of that stuff. Size and type of tires, and if it is staggered at all. Mm-hmm. I just like to know what I'm working with. I've got experience pretty much with every tire that's really out there. And then an important one is, I'm not going to go through this entire list, it's long, but that
you're going to go through it with us, but that's a off topic, off podcast.
But then like the width of the wheels that they are on is vitally important for knowing mm-hmm. what's going on with your tires. Spring rates, load, like weight of the car, and if people have corner balance, like if they've had their car corner balance, I absolutely want to know that. Mm-hmm. Aero. And then the last couple are just kind of subjective. What does your car do well? Like, what things do you feel like the car is able to do well for you? And then if your car, you know, and this is just going into the weekend, if your car could do one thing better, what would you want it to do better? And then we revisit those at the end of the weekend, because it's kind of interesting how those answers tend to change. Mm-hmm. So with all these questions, that kind of gives me an idea of what we're working with, what we're able to change and modify at the track, because I'm not the one working on their cars unless like I can hand them wrenches and stuff and like kind of point to things. They really want help. I'll, you know, they're in a time crunch, I'll lend a hand, really, because like it's their car. I don't want to screw something up.
Yep.
I can't afford to fix their car, probably. So when we're talking about spec Miata, I've got a spec Miata in my mind. So you still have a 1.8 liter engine in there, I assume, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the VVT is it the non-VVT?
I think it's VVT.
Okay, great. Good little stout motor. But then we'd be looking at, are you still on the spec Miata suspension and spring rates and shocks? The sway bars, are they adjustable? Is the front one, is the rear one? What ride height to the pinch welds? Because that's how Miatas talk about ride height, is at the pinch welds, front and rear. Do you know the corner balance, et cetera, et cetera? I assume it's still spec Miata, so it's no aero on the car as well. And then I would look at, are you just driving this thing in circles, or do you have aspirations for time attack, for wheel to wheel and in kind of what class, because then that, you know, some of my suggestions, especially at the end of a weekend, could be aero related if that works into your class. But if it doesn't, I'm going to use my brain power on something else.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're there's much longer to this. That's just a preparation going into the track day. Is there, let's say we're doing a practice or we're test day, whatever we want. We've got more or less an open track. Should we choose a big long track? Should we choose a tight and windy, you know, very technical track? Should we, whatever we can get to that's local, or do you have any preference?
Yeah, I would say go to a track that you are familiar and comfortable with. Doesn't have to be the biggest, baddest track that you've ever tracked before. But for us, it's going to be Gingerman. Right. We've tested at Autobahn as well. These are all places we're close and we're familiar to where me as a driver, I'm comfortable enough and I can go out and drive to 8 or 9 tenths of what I'm capable of all day, mm-hmm. and not really have to spend much brain power doing that. Hmm. Because I think it's important, because when you're making setup changes, again, your brain only has so much bandwidth it's able to do. But if you're able to extract most of what the car has at a particular track without thinking about it much, that's going to leave much more brain power available to feel the changes in the car and what's different from before.
Mm-hmm.
So going into a weekend, like if your express purpose is to make changes to the car to see what they do in hopes of making it faster, question sure. mark.
Well, sure. I mean, I think there's some, you know, hey, you know, future Vicky, the car is doing X. I remember that means we need to adjust Y.
Yes.
You know.
And this is where, when somebody asks me, hey, what's the line to X, Y, and Z corner? Or, hey, so if I make this change on, if I increase front rebound, what does that do to the car? I can tell you, but unless you feel it,
exactly,
it's not really going to help you very much. It's only going to be intellectual as an exercise, but unless you get on track and experience it, it's not a thing. And so what I've learned working with Grid Life and helping instruct their novice program is, rather than tell these new drivers or novice drivers, hey, this is an early apex corner, this is a late apex corner, they don't know what that means. To be honest, most drivers don't know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
So what I have them do for one session is go out for 3 laps in a row. I want you to early apex everything.
Mm-hmm.
Then I want you to, for 3 laps, late apex everything. And I want you to exaggerate them both. Like, really lean into this exercise. And then with whatever laps left, do what you want. And oftentimes what they'll end up doing is starting to blend things in terms of, oh, this corner felt better with this kind of turn in and this kind of apex.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, what I want you to do, and generally we have 2 to 3 novice students per instructor, is when you come back, I want you to grab a water, just take a moment, and I want you to be able to tell me what an early apex allows you to do, but what you have to give up in order to do it. And same for a late apex.
Right.
And that would be my same question for any setup change we do on a car, is when we make this change. All right, so say this session, we're going to go out, Vicky, and we are going to start you out with a full stiff sway bar in the rear, all the way. Put 2 sway bars on there. Let's go ham. I want you to feel that out. and I want you to feel what it allows you to do, because there is a benefit in doing that. But what does that take away? Then, just before halfway, going to come in, and ideally you want to practice this, and hopefully they allow you to do it in hot pits, is we're going to drop one of the rear links, so you're going to be driving functionally without a sway bar, and we're going to send you back out for the rest of the session. What changes? What does that then allow you to do? And what have you gained when you did that? Because there are always situations where there's no better or best here. It's just one allows you to do this, the other allows you to do that. And in certain circumstances, you're going to want to choose one way or another. But with those big swings, especially, it's going to allow you to know exactly what's happening. Like two clicks on shocks, most people aren't. You're not going to feel that. Even one like sway bar hole, like if you just move one of the end links, one hole, that's maybe 50 pounds of spring in the back. It's not a whole lot. So most people, they might not feel that. But if you take your sway bar full stiff and then basically take it off the car, you're probably going to feel that.
Right. At least you'll have a metric to work with.
Exactly.
You're educating your butt.
Yeah. And then that would be, you then start like a Britannica on your feeling. Mm-hmm. And so front rear sway bar, full stiff. In your own words, what does that feel like? Mm-hmm. What does that allow you to do? And what do you have to give up when you do that? Same for rear sway bar, full soft. Same thing, your own words. If you want to use oversteer, understeer, push, twitchy, if you want to say super responsive, whatever the words are, that's really important to use your own words so that when you refer back to them, it clicks with you. You don't have to do the work of translating somebody else's words. We're working hard enough as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put that in a separate folder. And so when you're on track in the future, you're like, you know, out of all the changes I could do, this is one of the changes I could do. And this is what I recall it feeling like. And these are the words. Maybe that'd be something I'd like to try here.
Or you could,
interesting.
You could be feeling something saying, I don't like this. There's too much of whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
For sure. I love the feeling of a car with really stiff springs and sway bars, like really stiff rolls. I love it.
What does it do?
It's very responsive.
Oh, okay.
There's very little load transfer happening. So when you turn the wheel, like car just kind of goes.
Mm-hmm.
But if there are bumps, if you're hitting curbs, if you're on not super sticky tires or narrow tires, it's going to be a handful.
Mm-hmm. Rain.
Yep. That'd be a real thing.
So you could theoretically just right there at the track, just adjust your car per every condition.
Yes.
Yes. Testing day
and knowing what to expect. So, I mean, what might be good for one track might not be good for another track.
Will not be. And I can say that with
certain.
Yes. Yeah. So you're basically starting your own little library. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the idea when you keep one folder worth of just setup impressions and notes, and then you keep track specific notes. So that when you're preparing for that track next year, mm-hmm. Hey, this is what we did last year. Now, as the season went on, we kind of made these changes. So we're not going to do exactly what we did last year, but we have that as a reference and a baseline. So let's go there with these changes and start with a new baseline. Go from there.
Mm-hmm.
It really speeds up the process. And in your test weekend, again, kind of knowing what you are and are not willing to change, you know, say you've got four sessions a day, you can do 16 changes in a weekend. So you can do sway bars, front rear sway bars. You can do front and rear rebound. If you've got rebound, you can do tire pressure, higher and lower. And you can even split that up into front and rears if you've got the time. But I think it's also important to do these changes mid-session. Because you've just come from track, same conditions, same track. You take 2 minutes to come in. You know, you want to clear it with your grid workers. You come into hot pits, stop, make a quick change, send you back out on your way, finish out your session, make some notes, move on to the next thing.
So what I would really like to do, I mean, I would love to do this for myself, but I think the maybe even more valuable is for you and Jennifer. Because that way, in the only time in my life I'd ever want you to be a smartass, this would help you with having you a more educated posterior to know, like, oh, the car doesn't feel. And because a lot of the times, Scott, when we were at a race, sometimes we'll send somebody out to say, what's it doing? It's not right, but I don't know what to do about it. And this would help alleviate that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, you guys mentioned earlier that, you know, you're not always the most diligent in taking video or starting data. I do think it's important.
It is.
Or kind of all sessions, but especially when you are doing these kind of test sessions, because, you know, Vicky, if you and someone else were to want to do, you know, a test weekend with each other in separate cars, you guys go out on track, you're doing the exact same thing in both sessions. And then you guys come back after making those couple changes, and you can talk with one another, share, like, okay, I felt this, like it felt like it was able to do this. And they're like, yeah, okay, when you said that, that made me think of this thing. And in this turn, when I went to turn in and the rear bar was, you know, full stiff, like it really kind of did this for me. And then all of a sudden, you know, you guys start to share that language and figure out and kind of draw out of each other, you know, what was happening, recalling the things and the sensations and the references that were being collected at the same time. So rather than just like you and your coach or your setup person, now you're bringing in another person, and that just, again, it speeds up the process.
Sounds like something we should do at
I know.
Pineview Run.
This is just like a lot of information, but it's a lot of needed information, because this is one of the hangups. Like, we're crossing into this area now. So this is really good information.
Well, I think what's good to keep in mind is it is a lot of information, but really when you're on track, there's sensations.
Right.
Like you're not thinking, okay, well, I did this, so therefore the load on my inside rear is going to be increased. So that means I'm going to be able to, no, you're just, okay, the car feels twitchier on entry. Now.
Right.
Okay. Good to know. When I turn the steering wheel, it's much more eager to go where I want to. Interesting. Good to know. And so when you come off, what sounds just like a lot of words and equations is lived experience.
Right.
And that's what really sits well with you over the long period, and why I have people do more drills rather than me telling them, all right, if you do this, this is what happens and this is what you gain. Because it's only my words, like you haven't lived it.
Indeed. I think we might have actually made an episode where Vicky's going to go listen to it.
Yeah, actually, I am. I am. And then I have this Miata, which you feel a lot in a Miata. I don't know, maybe because it's more go-kart like almost, but not really. It's so, yeah, going out, this is going to be interesting to experience.
And I've
but at least now I know what to look for.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a good starting point.
And I know I've heard you say that, you know, you're nervous about the whole rear wheel drive coming from front wheel drive. I know the trucks obviously is rear wheel drive too, but Miatas are great.
I've had a Miata. I actually had the same Miata, except it was had a fly-in turbo in it, a fly-in Miata turbo setup, which, and I've explained this on the podcast before, where I've worked it to where it became too street for track and too track for street.
That's
so
fair.
It became a very uncomfortable car to be in. And
Scott knows nothing about having a Miata transition from something comfortable to uncomfortable.
Yes. So, you know, as a daily, you know, you just felt everything in the road, and it just could never perform what I wanted it to do on the track because of the boost that would constantly happen and the overheating of the engine if I'm not careful. So sold it, and Bill, for our 25th anniversary, had stolen my project spec, and it came back completely done by Planet Miata, which I have not sat in it. Well, I've sat in it, but briefly, and had it on track twice at an HPDE at that weekend. So
where this at?
We took it to NJMP.
Lightning.
Yeah. We'll probably take it out to Pine View Run and probably do a couple laps in it there.
For sure.
And then I'll probably be training in it first. You know, so probably have some HPDEs, some training events, some track events, and then
Mid-Ohio coming up.
Yeah, I got Mid-Ohio. Bill's sending me. I think that is August, roughly. If it's August, it's going to be miserable.
It's May.
No.
Yeah.
I don't believe so. I think May is VIR. So anyway, we have our whole list out. I think it might be later.
Yeah, so, you've got Mid-Ohio 3 times this year.
Oh, okay. Nice. I think we're having a husband-wife thing. We just did our whole schedule. I'm being sent out for training this year. Bill went for training the last 2 years, so I'm going solo.
Cool.
And our schedule is a little fluid at the moment because we have a lot on it.
We do.
Yeah.
So Scott, I know Vicky and Jennifer have been a little concerned because I am a proponent of driving a bunch of cars, and we have a few cars that we use for track cars, and we have more cars that we use for HPD cars. What do you think about same day switching cars just to see the difference between a front wheel drive and a rear wheel drive? Like, let's say we took Vicky out in we raced the Civic to 93 EG, and then we put her in the Miata or the BMW just to see and get to feel the difference between them, because I don't think they're as big as she's concerned about.
I guess I would want to see if the two of you thinks that that would be something that would help you, if riding in the passenger seat or driving them, if that kind of brief experience would be enough to then go back or stay in. Why you would be doing that. You know, sometimes it can kind of just be a shock factor of it. You know, you come off track just with wide eyes, like, I'm not really sure what's happened. And that might not help all the time. So I think as long as all of you thought that that's was going to be helpful or is like a good step to do, yeah, sure, go for it.
Miss Vicky, what are you thinking? Sir.
I keep thinking that there's a couple cars that we have that I need to learn how to drive, but ultimately I need to pick a car and focus on a car and get to know a car very, very well. So, which might end up being that Miata. But we lemons race in, that's the thing, is we have cars for different types of racing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I need to pick one to actually train in and stay in that one and then transfer my knowledge over into other cars with that instead of just keep bouncing around from car to car to car.
Yeah. And if drivers struggle with confidence, jumping around from car to car can be not helpful. Mm-mm. Because of the different sensations and different pedal and steering wheel inputs that need to happen to drive different cars quickly.
Like you said, it's hard to focus on a sensation alone, on what is a proper sensation if every car you're into is giving you a different sensation, which is the right sensation. And once you, in my brain, as I'm kind of forming it out, I suppose that once you get the idea of what a car is supposed to feel like, then it's easier for you to transition from one to the other to the other.
Yep.
But trying to get there, you know, in this phase of my learning.
Sure. Yeah. And I definitely appreciate that variety can sometimes be a big help. That switching from different car, like to a high horsepower car, from a low horsepower car, to a car with some meaningful aero, back to a car that doesn't have any. And to feel, again, these are like the big changes that we would be doing to any one car, is you're just doing the biggest change of all of them. You're just changing the car. And so, interesting. Mm-hmm. This car does the turn in here much better. It's a lot more stable and high speeds than this other one is. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those, like, instead of focusing on driving a car on the ragged edge immediately, just focusing on what the car does well and what the car doesn't do well. Mm-hmm. That then, again, picking out those different experiences and sensations can allow you to kind of understand, like, when you do decide to settle into one car a little bit more, kind of you're more aware of what the car is able to do and not. Because I can tell you, a short wheelbase car cannot do what a long wheelbase car can do.
Right.
But there are some real advantages of having a short wheelbase.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of, you know thyself, knowing what you got.
What suit are you going to wear for the day, you know, and what it's going to give you
exactly
at that track.
Now for you, are you more interested in doing, like, being an endurance driver, sprint driver, time attack, or just
I do enjoy the endurance racing a lot because it's more time in the car for me to feel what I need to feel.
Sure.
And it's just long practice sessions is basically what I'm doing. So I'll probably end up sticking with that, but I wouldn't mind trying the other two at all. You know, that would be really great. But now that I have this spec Miata, I mean, that's going to be something I'm going to be probably doing a time attack maybe with. I don't know.
Or spec racing.
Or spec racing.
Sprint racing, sorry.
Yeah, don't know.
I was about to say, spec me out of racing is something different.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it's kind of scary. I don't like the idea because, you know, you have this really great car and all of a sudden all these people are kind of hitting you. You know, I don't like that.
I know.
So I don't know. I do like with this particular car is not some. I do not want to put it like in a Lemons race, obviously. It's a nice car. So I would probably do a different level of racing with it to where, you know, there's not as much traffic control needed. You know, there's more spacing.
You can time attack a spec Miata. It just won't be spec Miata.
Yeah. So where I'm going to place it, I'm not quite sure yet.
Cool.
But, I mean, we have the Lemons car because, you know, that's fun. That's great for training. And you know, having a good time doing that. But, you know, going now, you know, thinking about going into AR and, you know, doing more leveled racing. And of course, there's Sunday Cup, which we have a vehicle for that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, what else are we doing?
Autocross.
Yeah, probably some autocross. I mean, that's just cross training.
And I'm doing B-Spec.
Yeah,
as well as B-Spec. Sunday Cup.
Yeah, B-Spec racing.
Yeah, it is interesting hearing the two of you talk that, you know, it does sound like you're doing a lot of training, which I do think is good. Like to hear more about performing sometimes because
mm-hmm. Well, you'll be hearing all about our performing.
Yeah.
Because we will be bothering you this season.
Mm-hmm. Good. Bother me away.
Not a problem. If other people were to say, this sounds interesting, or I could use some of this, or I don't know enough about this, perhaps you might know some way that they could work with you. I don't know, just a guess.
I do. I have a website specifically. It's just robertson-racing.com. You can kind of find out more about the team we have, as well as the driver coaching we offer, set up consultation and kind of set up work on your car. And both of these, the coaching and the setup work, if I'm going to be there, the cost comes down. And then because I'm going to be there anyway, you know, I don't have to travel and things like that. We do have private days and private weekends where we can get a whole lot of work done. And you've got all of my attention. I can also do remote stuff, which I've done a fair bit of. You know, years past, I've coached drivers at COTA while I'm in my living room here. And, you know, we've had some good success with that. Same with data and video review in between sessions and the like. We also carry Apex Pro products and Race Sense gauges, which are the pyrometer that we use. And then we've got a bunch of leggings that Becky designs for track use that she really likes as well.
Yes. Miss Vicky, you haven't met Becky yet, but she is similar to Scott as you are to me, in that I have no problem saying you are more mechanically inclined than I am, and I'm not sure Scott's going to deny that either. So we need to get the two of you together one time.
She is good at what she does, and she likes that she's good at what she does.
Mm-hmm.
And she, it's been really cool to see her progress over the last 5-6 years with not only her knowledge of cars, but also her skill as a driver and confidence mm-hmm. as a driver as well, has been really cool. And the one lap has definitely been a part of that for her.
Well, so nice. So
before we depart, Scott,
mm-hmm.
you're talking to a puppy.
I know.
I was supposed to be there last year, but the Pennsylvania registration, as you well know, did not go well.
Didn't work out.
No. But I'll be puppying this year. So
yes.
What should I bring besides my little paper to make sure I don't wet the floor or anything?
Yeah, sure. you guys are in a B-spec car, so you really have all the room in the world
mm-hmm.
to do stuff back there. Definitely a tire inflator, battery-powered tire inflator. That's a big one for us. Your basic tools, torque wrench, anything that you will need to keep an eye out, bring the tools for. You don't need to bring an entire chest. We've got 85 of us, and between most of us, we'll have something if you need something specialty related.
Mm-hmm.
Bring a tire plug kit just in case.
Good one.
Knock on wood, we haven't ever had to use ours, but I'm waiting.
No, if you don't bring it, you know you will.
Exactly. Bring a rain jacket or an umbrella. We've only had 1 year where it hasn't rained. You know, something, ideally totes. Like totes are a big mm-hmm. plus because they're plastic, they're waterproof on their own, and they can just sit out in the rain and not care. Otherwise, you know, some big old contractor trash bags to cover your stuff.
Okay.
I heard somebody, who was it? They had the the pop-up wire tents. You just kind of toss them and they just, yep. And you put your stuff in there.
Yep. Instant tents are good if you got them.
If you can fold them back up.
Yeah, yep. That's a, you got to practice on that like you practice getting out of a race car.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Chairs if you want. And then whatever you need to be comfortable as a driver and a passenger.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a talk that Brock gave when we were puppies that I still recall, is that the driver has to trust your passenger.
Yes.
And vice versa. Because if, as a driver, if you're not alert and doing your job, your passenger isn't sleeping. And your passenger's job is to sleep and get rest so that they can then drive. Like that is the relationship. So as a driver, do you need music? Do you need books on tape? Do you need music of any sort? Do you need particular sunglasses, water bottle?
Earphones.
Yeah,
earbuds.
Whatever it is. As a passenger, like what is going to allow you to relax and sleep? For me, it's a neck pillow and something to put over my eyes, as well as earplugs, because we've generally been in very loud cars. Snacks on the road are important. It is very important to eat healthy. We've done years where we haven't, but we always feel better when we do. And it's hard to eat healthy on the road, but it takes a little intentionality.
For sure. What about the pluses and minuses of a single driver per track versus morning and afternoon splits?
Sure. So I think if you are out on the one lap to experience as many things as possible as a team, I think splitting the days is great, because then you both get to drive all the tracks. Kind of creates a fun rivalry, who gets to go faster sort of thing. It can be really fun that way. We have never done it that way. We've always split up tracks according to driver. It allows the driver, you to pick up time and learn from the morning to the afternoon. So, you know, typically it's a little more competitive if you do it that way. But again, really just depends on why you're there.
Well, we're going to be in a flock of Sunday Cup cars, so it'll be fine. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Cooper, right?
Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah. If I'm not, then I take Vicky's car, so there's incentive for her to finish my car.
Yes.
So there's a little less space inside of a Cooper, but still.
Yes. You got to be creative.
The seat does recline. The seat does recline in the passenger seat. So
that's.
It depends on how much you got loaded.
It's going to be enough for the seat to recline. That's what it's going to be.
Believe me, that's important.
It is, because that's the only reason we're not taking the Beastback car, because the cage is behind it and it does not recline.
Know something about that.
Yeah, a little bit.
You've done that too?
Yeah, last year Becky put a cage, a roll bar in her car, and passenger seats would not recline or slide all the way back.
Oh, I bet you were miserable.
Yeah, so it wasn't great.
For sure.
But I'm going back to my roots and driving a car that's going to be harsh and miserable on transits. And maybe not miserable, but it's not going to be a lap of luxury. So,
indeed.
Details to come.
So Vicky had a question that I'm not allowed to ask.
When will Bill return to normal after the one lap of America?
Ooh.
How long does it take to recover?
How long of a drive from South Bend to where you live is it?
That's.
Well, let me just do the calculation.
12 hours.
Okay.
South Bend. What is it? South Bend? What?
Indiana.
Indiana. Are you and your co-driver, are you guys planning on heading back immediately after the banquet on Saturday?
Maybe not the whole way.
Okay.
He lives in Ohio, so
yeah, it's about 9 hours. Yeah,
that's not terrible. Okay,
it's not terrible.
So I think there's two reasons. One, she wants to know when I can start doing stuff again that would be helpful. And two, we have theoretically Hyperfest is the weekend after.
Oh no, we're not doing that. No.
You can do that, actually.
You can. Should we?
So when Becky and I knew that we were hooked on the one lap, when our first one lap wasn't done and we were talking about next year and kind of what we found, we are luxurious in that we live very close to South Bend. It's only like 2 hours away from us. It's great.
Oh,
we've got people who drive from Colorado, from Florida, all over the place. I mean, they've got another one lap virtually just to get back home, let alone the one that they did just to start. So we're able to get back early Saturday and start sitting on the couch very early, which is great.
Wow.
The next day is a wash, really, for us. We are just kind of zombies, but relaxing, hanging out, doing it. But really by Monday, Tuesday, kind of, you know, we're bummed because we're not on the one lap, but, you know, we're doing the things we need to at that point. And then really by the end of the next week, we're like, ah, kind of want to go back, and can we just make this our lives? Like,
indeed. All right. So I've got one more question. Okay. Does GLTC need more, a Mini Cooper or an Odyssey?
Oh, I love the van. Love the van very much. We've only had one Mini Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
But we've only had one van.
I know.
On paper, I think, well, the reliability of Mini Coopers has been
rough. Stellar. Stellar.
Rough. So really I would start to do the kind of cost analysis, like just on a weekend, how much in tires and brakes and gas and whatever else you're going to wear out is it? Because you can fit a lot of tire and a lot of brake under a van.
True. But you're also driving a rather large barn.
It's true. And nobody outstops the van. It's impressive.
Mm-hmm. I just my concern about the van is, does it even have a path towards midfield?
So that becomes the thing. You know, we talked earlier about the type of vehicle and the aftermarket support, the parts availability, the community that's been playing with these. The making it a hardcore wheel-to-wheel vehicle out of an Odyssey is a very narrow window of largely professional Toyota and Honda engineers.
Yeah, exactly.
Mini Coopers, there are, I still wouldn't say a large, but there are plenty of people who take those out and drive them on track every weekend. So I would think that that might be more of a path forward in terms of community parts. You know, it's still a German car, so you've got to deal with that. But
yep, exactly. Well, I've already swapped it. It's no longer wheel bolts, so we're good. We're halfway there.
There you go.
So, Scott, thank you again for coming on. Before you depart, any thank yous or shout outs for the Robertson Racing team?
Becky, crew chief and fiance.
Absolutely.
Like, whoop, whoop. No power.
Future podcast guest.
Probably just good luck to my mom. She's doing the one lap this year for her first time as well.
Awesome.
Our team aerodynamicist and data numbers guy, Tim Miller. Great longtime buddy, Chandler, who comes to some weekends and he helps us wrench in the heat and cooks us food and is just a great dude to be around. Yeah, Seth Lemke for being my friend. former driving teammate Brian DeFries as well, who is currently New Zealand, doing New Zealand things, I guess.
Looking for hobbits.
Maybe. So yeah, all those guys, and then some of our partners like G-Lock Brakes, HMS Motorsport, Al's Auto Body, stuff like that. They've been great.
Awesome, sir. Well, thank you again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Good to talk to you both.
Absolutely. Track Walking Podcast, still going strong.
So far, so good.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, thank you again, Scott.
Yeah, thank you.